Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
What is this, amateur hour?
Yeah, I ain't no Superman businessman like you. You know, I'm just an
amateur,
I suppose.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Amateur hour
is what's happening.
Do you remember the year 2012 in September? That's when amateur hour first began. Just two friends talking about the Chiefs. The team was awful. A lot's changed since 11 years ago. Now we have Andy Reid and Pat Mahomes. And oh yeah, we won a Super Bowl.
You're welcome.
It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour. It's almost time for amateur hour to start. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, yeah. Football and friendship and lots of fun, oh yeah.
Wow. Let's go!
Yeah, that's right, folks. The show's called Amateur Hour. I am Ryan Scott Hall. And joining me today, his darkness.
So,
well, Dirk, that was quite a game. The Chiefs and Raiders battled it out on Monday night. Kind of an old school AFC West snot bubbler of a football game.
Yeah. With Jacobs running, yeah. My God.
So I feel like the headline is Arrowhead crowd wins game all on their own. And that's not all on their own. But like my I was so fascinated watching from home. I thought they were absolutely overwhelming on the broadcast. For people that don't recall because it was just a crazy time, or people that were at the game and didn't know that this happened, after halftime, coming out of halftime, they were still booing so loud that they did a sideline report with Lisa Salters that you simply could not hear on the broadcast. Could not hear a word that came out of her mouth. The Arrowhead crowd was immense and overwhelming and completely took over that game.
Yeah, I don't know if I ever remember a game quite like that with like a bad call, just like the impact that it created in the middle of a game. Like, obviously, you've seen bad calls at the end of a game kind of decide it, and that's, you know, whatever. But this bad call swung the game in the opposite way. And it had like multiple levels here. The crowd reached insane levels. I saw multiple people on Twitter who were at the game, I assume, say that was the loudest they ever heard Arrowhead. Lots of comparisons to
142.2.
I'm not sure.
50 something.
By the way, they always show decibels at like other stadiums now, it'll be like 92, and it's just like, oh, that's cute.
Yeah, I mean it's like kind of funny. Yeah.
congrats guys. So anyways, the crowd, and then I mean the booing, you're just wondering like how long can they keep this up? I mean, can they keep it up through the entire second half? And not only that, it wakes up the team that had been just kind of sleepwalking up until that point. I mean, the Jerick McKinnon run kind of woke them up before that. And it kind of, I think the next drive was the Chris Jones fumble. So I think the run kind of contributed to that as well. But like, really, I mean, the team was just, they seemed fucking pissed after that. And like, we're out to get something. Also, you had in the third quarter, what felt like carte blanche and the Chiefs could do whatever they wanted. Like, they weren't going to get calls on them. And we had all these calls against the Raiders. And we actually had, like, a legit makeup call, which is something you see in the NBA all the time. Like, you see a cheap call on one end, and it goes down, you get a cheap call on the other end, and then that's about it. In football, you almost never see makeup calls. But the defensive holding on a field goal, that's about as makeup call-y as it gets, and legitimately worthy. Like, at that point, I wasn't even mad at the refs anymore. Like, okay, we're even here. We're even. How about that?
I heard today, listening to the radio, the first defensive holding on a field goal since 2015. That hadn't been called in 7 years. That's a real makeup call.
It gets better. Do you know the details? The last team called for it was the Raiders. And the ref in that game,
Carl Jeffers.
How about that? we haven't even mentioned the best moment. When Carl Jeffers speaks to the crowd in the middle of the third quarter. And this was something I thought, like, at the time it seemed bad. Then, like, we'd go back and listen to it and you could like hardly notice. No. Watching it after the fact, it legitimately sounds like he's been crying and has to still talk through it to the crowd. And this is like, 45 minutes, an hour after that call? Like, I've never seen such long-lasting effect of a call in a game. And it was incredible. Everybody there should take a bow, and I would be right there with him. I'm watching with family. My dad's in town. I'm trying to keep it together, but I'm just like, it was so bad. It was like, I wasn't even that mad. It was just like, this is unbelievable. And my last point, because I want to give an old school shout out to the best and worst here. And I might try to make this a theme. I was kind of excited that this just came to my mind. But we saw the best and the worst of the NFL in that game. Because we went from, I cannot believe what the NFL has become. How can I even support this? After that Chris Jones penalty, to after the game, man, this is exactly why I love football. Back and forth, never giving up. The dramatics of that game, the rivalry, pulling it out like that. Like, we saw the absolute best and the absolute worst of the NFL all within the same 3 hours. So it was just amazing.
There's potential here that this can, like, grow the legend of petty Patrick Mahomes. Look, credit Carl Jeffers for changing that game in a way that, like, if he doesn't make that call, it's possible that momentum has already shifted anyways, because the Chiefs would have the ball at, like, the Raiders 25-yard line or something, right? And I think the defense has only forced 4 or 5 total turnovers through 5 games. They're not really bringing it home in that department. And so, you know, as well as anyone, like, a defensive stop and a turnover like that at Arrowhead, like, they're going to be rocking, right? Regardless of whether he gets the continued chorus of boos for the next foreseeable future. But, like, that call literally changed that game. The outcome of the game is what it was because of that call. He motivated the Chiefs. And that's not to say they would not have won if he didn't make the call, but he did. So thank you, Carl Jeffers, for lighting a fire under seemingly everyone, because it was like all of the adjustments that they went into halftime making. How about Matt Wright kicking a 59-yard field goal off of all of this just incredible energy inside of that stadium?
The longest field goal in team history. Some dude named Matthew Wright. We're 5 years from now, we're going to have no clue who that guy is. Like, wait, what is this? 15 from M. Wright. Who the fuck is that?
I mean,
he's going to kick 2 games because Butker's coming back this week. It'll be 2 games. Yeah. He kicks the longest, and he can't kick a 32-yard field goal, or at least he's got the ball glued to that post. That he just seemed like he was aiming for the post every single time. Kick, other than the 59-yarder, was just like an adventure, just going straight to that post. Like, oh my god, it's gonna hit it! Doink! No.
Yeah, it's a crazy game. I mean, it felt like a circus. I mean, I'll say this. I don't think that I like have the lungs to do Arrowhead the way that I used to. And I hate that, because it's like, I feel like I have to kind of like conserve my voice when I'm there. And everybody it's, on a Monday dude, night like, was just so reckless.
It's like Andy Reid. You got to save the good plays for the big games. You got to save your voice for the big plays. Like, I'm sorry, guys. I know I should be yelling. But it's 2nd and 10. I got to save it for this 3rd and 6 coming up. I got to save it.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's also, I think that I was trying to think of like what the missing out, not having been there for such a special night. Like, I'm definitely envious that I wasn't in that crowd. Not all of our listeners have probably seen this movie, but it made me think of the scene in Almost Famous when William's talking to his mom and he can't hear anything, and she keeps repeating that she loves him. She's like, I miss you and I love you.
The aura is purple.
That is how I feel.
It's purple.
Watching this crowd, I'm like, I was just so, I felt like a proud dad. I'm not a dad, but like watching it and just thinking like how many games I was out there for, and now, you know, missing this one, it feels kind of tough. It does, you know?
Yeah. I haven't even thought about that, but that does go down in lore. It's actually easier not being in Kansas City, because in Kansas City you always have the like, you know, you can just get to any game pretty much. So it's just like, oh man, I could have so easily gone to that game. And yeah, that will go down for everybody who was there in lore of Arrowhead history. And we all have those games. I mean, me and you have plenty of games that we've been to together that, you know, all go down in history. And it's, and you're just happier there, and you never really know when it's gonna happen. You just try to be there and hope magic like that happens.
And you know, it's the only like comparison that I can think of is the video that we pull out almost every single time that we're playing the Broncos. And it's like, yeah, flashback to that time that Arrowhead was so loud that the ref was telling them, we're going to penalize you if you don't stop. I will penalize the Chiefs if the crowd doesn't quiet down. I mean, the opposite happened here, because the ref in that situation was trying to control an uncontrollable, you know, crowd, essentially. But in this case,
it's a mob at that point.
So overwhelmed the referees that, and look, I'm gonna drink my own Kool-Aid here. I'm gonna promote myself. But at halftime, I said, down 20-10 at half in a really weird contest, and yet this has the feel of a game that the Chiefs will find a way to win. The Arrowhead crowd is so punishing that the refs will be paralyzed for the final 30 minutes. Buckle up. And like, I was honestly very surprised that the Chiefs didn't end up winning that game by like double digits. I felt like they sputtered out, and, you know, I'm sitting there with about 4 minutes left, I think, in the third quarter. And I'm like, they're going to blow the doors off of this team. And they didn't. And it ended up, you know, being a 1-point game, and they're, you know, a toe touch away from probably losing, or two guys maybe running a different route on the same play from losing. I mean, the Chiefs win that game because of, you know, it's a ridiculous number of things that have to fall into place for that game to win. I'm curious about this, Dirk, because if you look at the results between the AFC opponents and the NFC opponents through 5 weeks for the Chiefs, they have beaten Tampa Bay by 10 and the Cardinals by 20, I think. And each of the three games against AFC opponents have been decided by 3 points or less. We beat the Chargers by 3, we lost to the Colts by 3, and we beat the Raiders by 1. And so I want to ask you, I think that the answer has to be some kind of degree of yes, but I want to ask you, like, Have AFC West teams, or maybe even AFC teams that have been building to beat the Chiefs, like, it seems like all of those games are just going to naturally now be closer. And we also think that the AFC is stacked with talent. Maybe that's kind of natural here, but like, have these teams that are trying to build themselves to beat the Chiefs, like, are they successful? I mean, we still have this 41-5 in the last 46 AFC West game streak that's going on, which is just an unbelievable number. It's basically since Peyton stopped playing for the Broncos, they've just won everything all the time, right? But I see that. I mean, we kept talking about last year, like, is the gap closing? You know, are these teams doing this thing? Like, and now Patrick Mahomes, for the first time in his career, is not favored at Arrowhead. I mean, I think that we have to, in a lot of ways, admit that it's super close in the AFC, and the Chiefs might be able to still blow the doors off some teams, but I wonder if every AFC West game is going to look like the first two have, even against the Broncos.
Well, I mean, well, maybe not the Broncos, but Mitch Schwartz kind of tweeted something about this, that like you're starting to see the effects of like team building in the AFC and in the AFC West in particular, and just how they're building their teams to beat the Chiefs. And I mean, a lot of it's, I mean, you know what you have to do. You have to pressure Mahomes without blitzing. And so they bring in Chandler Jones. They got a fantastic player in Max Crosby. And those two were just pretty much single-handedly, double-handedly, I don't know what you want to call it, wrecking the game in the first half.
Oh, yeah.
And it was like, holy shit. Like, man, we can't block them. And then you're also seeing they added weapons to the outside. How do you want to attack the Chiefs on defense? Well, you want to attack their cornerbacks. So you get a guy like Davante Adams, and he's catching long passes and getting PIs, one of them good, one of them terrible. But you're seeing the effects of how a team builds to beat the Chiefs. And the Raiders, I mean, the Raiders brought it that game. And I think the Raiders are a good team. They're 1-4. I think they'll definitely crawl out of that. I think they're 8-9 win team. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised at all to see them climb into that seventh spot in the AFC. I think they're just solid. They just lost close games. I mean, you take away that 20-0 lead that they blew, and then this game, I mean, they're just losing close games. So I think the AFC is solid, and yes, you're seeing the effects of A, team building to beat the Chiefs, and B, you know, we're going to bring our best game plan to beat the Chiefs.
I thought that, at least in this game, the Chargers game is different because they did everything in the world to lose that game. And no, that was the Colts game. Sorry, mixing them up. But I mean, I don't know. I felt like one of the things that was really worrying me early, I was frustrated, but I was admittedly like, guys, why are we getting just completely whipped in the trenches on both sides of the ball? I really did not understand it. They said on the broadcast that this was the fifth different offensive line that the Raiders had started through five games. They had a seventh round rookie at right tackle, and I believe an undrafted player on the interior. Like, they cut a first round pick from like 2 years ago, offensive lineman, off of this team. I mean, that Raiders offensive line is not good. And I felt like they were having a really difficult time creating any kind of pressure on Derek Carr. And like, is Mike Dana that great? I don't know. We could use him. Losing Wharton sucks. But like, I don't know. I don't know what's happening with the defensive line. And the offensive line, we can use that in a separate conversation, whatever.
Well, I mean, we can get to both here. But I mean, yeah, the defensive line wasn't getting any pressure. And that was with Frank Clark having a good game. Like, Frank Clark was the one that was showing out. And it's usually like, man, if Frank Clark's bringing it, like, we should be in their backfield all game. Right. Like, I started calling out Chris Jones specifically, like, man, like, directly before the play, the call.
Yeah, it was within minutes or like a few plays. Yeah,
it was directly before. Yeah, I was like, where has he been? Like, so Frank's getting pressure. George got back there once. You know, it should be Chris Jones that's creating pressure. And he just didn't do it through the first 28 minutes of the game. And then, you know, finally did on make the big play of the game. Stopping the run. They're just, I don't know. I mean, RIP to the RB1 stats that we've been tracking, because Josh Jacobs just lit that on fire. Like, we were through four games just shutting down running backs, and now Josh Jacobs goes for, what do you have, 157 or something?
So and, Jacobs finished 21 for 154, which is, like, I think that – let me do the math. Speak for a moment. I'll do the math and see. I think he has more rushing yards than all of the RB1s that have played us in the first 4 weeks.
Yeah, I could see that. Yeah, so, I mean, it was just tough. And then I'll switch back to the offensive line. Right now, the offensive line, the offense kind of comes and goes with this offensive line. We've seen it be really, really bad and really, really good within this year so far, which is weird, because that's not something you typically say, like, about an offensive line. Like, offensive line is usually pretty steady throughout the year. Like, hey, this team has a good offensive line, they're going to play good every single game. It's not like a quarterback or like he has off games kind of thing. It's a whole unit, and they pretty much just play up to their ability nonstop. But we even got both in this side the same game here. The first half, the offensive line could not block them. And in the second half, I know they were doing a lot of chipping. I know they were doing a lot of helping with a running back or a tight end going to one side. But the offensive line, I mean, just turned it around. It's just like, I don't know if it's like an attitude, like a motivation kind of thing, but they were terrible in the Colts game, and they were terrible in the first half of this game. And when they're terrible, I mean, that's how you shut down the Chiefs offense, because that's when Mahomes, I mean, you saw in that first half, he was getting frustrated because he had those edge rushers in his face the entire first half. He couldn't get anything going.
So a theory, not my theory, but a theory. I heard Sorin Petro talking about he is now actively wondering if what the Chiefs are doing is saying, okay, Orlando, you want to be the highest paid left tackle in the league. So what we're going to do is, for the first quarter, we're going to call plays, put five wide out there, and treat you like the best left tackle in the league and see how it goes. And then after that first quarter, they're saying, you know what? Now we got to go out and win. So we're going to have to do all the helping and everything else that it requires in order for us to function, because you aren't that good. And I don't know if that's the case. I mean, I can totally see a world. It makes sense that the Chiefs would say, if you want to be paid like that, then we have to see if you can do it. This is what we would ask of the highest paid left tackle in the league. And they're allowing him to kind of hang himself a little bit. I don't know if that's the case, because that seems like a waste inside of a football game to be playing another game like that, you know? But I want to ask you this. Does Andy know that the Chiefs are better and more dangerous when they're balanced? I mean, it's kind of a chicken or the egg thing, but like, was the run not working, or was he not trying? I know that we got down 17. Like, I see there's a game script issue here, but the play that changed the script for them was Jerick McKinnon on a run play. What, and it was like, wasn't it second and 17 or something?
17. I mean, audibly groaned when he handed it off. I was just like, oh God, no.
And McKinnon just, I mean, he just chose, like, I am going to try to get people excited. And the Chiefs went on to score a touchdown on that drive. But I mean, it took them committing to running the ball a little bit to add the physicality, to try to match the Raiders, to slow those defensive ends down, to give his offensive line some confidence. I mean, look at how they operated against Tampa the week before. And they look so efficient on offense, because if teams are going to play this cover two, where it's, we're not going to let Pat complete deep passes, then you have to run the ball in order to be dangerous. You have to do it. And I know Andy doesn't want to, but it's like, I genuinely wonder, does Andy know that we're a better team when we are balanced on offense? Because it took physicality to play with the Raiders. As soon as the Chiefs started to match them physically, that is when that game was changing, when the outcome of the game is changing.
See, I mean, I almost kind of look at it like a motivational thing. And they were not up for the Colts game, and they were not up for this game, because, man, once once I started seeing commercials for Chiefs Bills on Sunday, when you know all the Chiefs players are sitting at home, they're watching games, they're seeing the commercials too, but they have to wait a whole other day and then play on that Monday when everyone's already looking forward. Oh man, Chiefs Bills, here we go, 6 days. And it's like, dude, you guys got to get up because the Raiders are a good team and they're going to come here. Like this is almost their Super Bowl. They're 1-3. Like their season is on the brink here. They're going to be bringing it. And the Chiefs are kind of like, they got one eye on Buffalo and they played like that. That's why I was like kind of thinking about the game. I didn't really have any genuine thoughts here. And then all of a sudden, like Monday afternoon, I was like, ah, shit. I don't like seeing all that yesterday and now going into this today. It's just, I hated playing on Monday night before that Buffalo game. And it took that physical run to wake them up. Like sometimes you just need a wake up call. It's like you see that and you're like, okay, now someone's playing, someone made a play. Now let's fucking go. And it was very similar to Chiefs Chargers early in the year. Clyde had a catch. I believe it was a catch and breaks a couple tackles and it just wakes the team up. Like, okay, here we go. And it's contagious. Like that feeling, it's contagious. And then once they start get going, and you know, we got the Tampa Bay game, they're rolling from the start. Like, I mean, they're extra motivated. They had those quotes coming in. They had the revenge from the Super Bowl. They were fucking ready to go. And so it's like a motivation issue with the team right now. And I think it's more like that than how we kind of speculated. It's like Andy play calls, like saving good plays. I almost feel like it's like the offensive line and the offense and the team in general needs to be motivated.
So I like that. I like that. Here's what I wonder to try to take it a step further and maybe twist the knife a little bit. If you're 41-5 against the AFC West over the past, whatever that is, 7 or 8 years, might be hard to get up for those games. We can call these things divisional games. We know it's important. They say that like their first goal every year is to win the division. And Andy and the Chiefs have been so dominant against the AFC West that, yeah, they know those games are important, but like, you know, that kind of run, it's not as long if it continues. I mean, look, that's like what the Patriots did in the AFC East. Tom Brady didn't win the division like once the whole time he was there practically. And so when you look at it that way, it's like the Chiefs have won the division. Is it six in a row now? Six?
That sounds right.
I mean, so it's almost like now I want to empathize with them, be like, yeah, I mean, the Raiders are a good team. And if you think about it situationally, because they're 1-3 and it's a big AFC West game and, you know, so on and so forth, national TV, of course the Raiders are going to be hyped up.
I mean, this came back to a preseason question where we talk about motivation, the disease of more, the disease of less. Have you bring in like a whole new squad here and kind of try and refresh the attitude where it's okay, balls to the wall every week kind of thing. Cause last year we just saw them just kind of fall apart for a few weeks. And it's just like, man, are they motivated coming off this 15-1 season, going to back-to-back Super Bowls? Like they kind of just think it's going to be easy when it's not. It's never going to be easy. So as soon as you lose that edge and think about last year, you know, the team that we were blowing out was the Raiders. And what's the context coming into that game? Hey, the Raiders beat us last year and they took a victory lap around the stadium. Mm-hmm. So they're preaching that the entire time. I mean, something, are they still preaching that? Are they still mad about that? I mean, that's 2 years ago now, new squad, maybe not. But I do think that will be an ongoing theme here of the season is how motivated are the Chiefs coming into each game?
And I mean, look, maybe it's just like a privileged position to be, well, are the Chiefs motivated and they still go out and win? You know, it was a tough game. The Raiders were up for it. 100%, you know, I think that the Raiders largely played well. They played their game and, you know, what was the stat? It was something like they had a 150-yard rusher and a receiver go for 130 yards and they didn't turn the ball over. And they're the first team to ever lose a game that's done those things.
I think fewer than two punts too, or two punts or fewer, something like that. Two total punts.
Yeah. I mean, so like the Raiders played well, and I don't know that you can say that the Chiefs played poorly. I mean, they came out flat, but they scored 30 points, you know, and like they came out victorious on a team that is, despite the fact that they're now 1-4, like they're actively, obviously trying to win a Super Bowl. And there are other teams in the league that we can't say that about. I just being honest here.
I would say, I think the offense is easier to figure out. They were bad for, you know, a quarter and a half.
Yeah.
And then, you know, and that was because of the offensive line. That was here. They were bad for this reason, or they were bad. Here's why. And then after that, they turned it on. They figured it out. Andy starts chipping, makes some adjustments, and then boom, the offense is rolling. I think the defense is a little more concerning because the Raiders did some things that, We talked about this defense being the best version of the Mahomes era. I wouldn't make that statement right now. I would walk that back because I think we kind of both agreed on that. Maybe I think we're just riding a little high, but I would walk that back at this point. The numbers, it's like, I think it's like 15 passing touchdowns allowed and only one interception or something. I do have questions about the secondary and honestly about the run defense at this point, because I just didn't expect after the first four games to see them run all over us like that.
And I don't really know what that's a product of. I don't know if losing Turk Wharton, they said that Turk was playing, like he was playing the highest percentage of snaps of any of the defensive tackles. He's playing more snaps than Chris Jones.
No, I can't be right.
Yeah, I think they said that he was at 60 something percent of the snaps, and those D tackles are rotating a lot. I mean, look, it's the most, aside from Chris Jones. That logically makes sense. But I thought they said that he was the highest percent of any defensive tackle so far through five games.
Now, he's probably at about 50% for the season, which is higher than I thought. 66% against Tampa Bay the week before.
Oh, okay.
I could see second highest. I saw Derek Nnadi getting moved wherever the Raiders wanted to put him. They were moving him there.
Well, I mean, and look, credit Josh Jacobs, man, because he was terrifying. Every time they handed him the ball, I was like, he's going to hurt people. He was running with so much authority that it was like, is this a guy that got his fifth year option declined? Or I was talking to my buddy and he said, is it a guy that figured it out? Josh Jacobs turned 24 in February. He's still very young. And so like he could just be coming into his body and into his own and being used the right way. I don't know, but he was terrifying as a runner on Monday night.
I actually like the move to not give him the fifth year option, because it essentially puts him in a contract year. And with running backs, they should be year to year anyways. Like, you want a running back in a contract year every single year. As soon as they get paid, that's when they go to shit. So I like, declining looked like a lack of faith in it, but it was like, maybe you pay him like $2 million more than you would have next year because he goes off this year. Like, maybe he's a top five running back all of a sudden. But it's worth it because you got that season out of him. And I do think the contract's part of that. I mean, if he's staring down $10 million guaranteed next season, yeah. I mean, that's how running backs work. You have to run with the fucking edge. And yeah. I think not giving him that contract gave it to him. I do want to talk some Jerk McChicken here, because he did wake the team up. And just looking at the stats, I mean, the box score, Clyde was bad in that game. We got bad Clyde again. And just looking at the box score, Jerk had 8 for 53. Clyde had 9 attempts for 15 yards.
He was at 7 for 7. And I think he literally doubled his run total on a run late in the game that only went for like 6 or 7 yards.
He has a long of 8. So,
yeah.
I just don't know what to do with the running backs. I mean, it's Pacheco last week. He hardly even plays this week. Jerk looks fantastic. I just wonder if it's going to be finding the hot hand each week. And I don't know what leads to that. I don't know if you get banged up and you just can't bring it, but it's like, we're seeing different running backs each week from each person. Like, you never know what you're going to get from each week. You're just hoping one of them steps up and runs hard.
I want to watch Ronald Jones. I want to see what it looks like. Because I don't feel like they have really given him a shot, aside from like, we're going to give you pity carries in the third preseason game or whatever. And then they were like, oh, look at what he did. Brett Veach basically says, oh, Ronald Jones made the team because he surprised us in that last game. And I'm like, what was surprising about it? And I'm like, when I think about how physical this offensive line is, he's such a perfect match for them. And this team has to be physical. They got to do it. They can't get dominated in the trenches and be this soft team anymore. We got so big on the outside at receiver. We've got a bigger offensive line. Use the running back, the big guy, the punishing guy.
And you saw the perfect situation for it, because in the 4-minute offense, when the Chiefs have the ball, they get to a second and three. They throw the little bubble screens to Sky Moore, which is fantastic to see. And then they get a second and three and run Clyde sideways, and he loses a yard or gets back to the line of scrimmage here.
Probably
and then,
out of the shotgun, too.
It was definitely out of the shotgun. And it's just like second and three. What better time to have Ronald Jones in there, line up under center, put a fullback in there, and plow away for a yard and a half for two plays in a row? Like, that's what you want out of him. I feel like we're going to say this every single week, and he's just going to be on the team. I will say real quick, we put Wayne Gallman on our practice squad. I've always had a thing for Wayne Gallman. I've always liked this dude. And so I don't know if he gets a shot. I don't know if maybe he replaces Ronald Jones. I'm not sure. But I always liked Wayne Gallman. It'll be real interesting to see if he gets a shot at some point.
Well-rounded guy. Can do it all.
Let's go to Travis Kelce. This might be the weirdest stat line in NFL history, which is something that I just adore. 7 catches for 25 yards and 4 touchdowns. This does seem deep dive worthy, but I think everybody already saw the stat that the next closest 4 touchdown performance was Marvin Jones with 93 yards. Every single other player that's caught 4 touchdowns in a game had over 100 yards. Travis Kelce had 25 yards. That's unbelievable. I've never seen a stat line even approach this in terms of weirdness. It's like, it's even weirder than like Jerome Bettis, I think, who had like the 5 carry for 0 yards and 3 touchdowns. That might be like the competition for weirdest stat line of all time. But just an insane stat line. I wanted to see 4 receiving touchdowns, the tiniest of deep dives here. We've seen it 5 times since 2004. 3 of those involved the Chiefs. One is Jamal Charles catching 5 touchdowns against the Raiders. And the other is Eric Decker catching 4 touchdowns in a game that we attended. The Marcus Cooper and also Brandon Flowers getting abused in that game. I don't know how that year for that.
At the time, the most expensive ticket I'd ever paid for a Chiefs game. We paid a ton of money to be there that night, and it was not good.
And it's only happened 11 times since 1995. 4 receiving touchdowns in the same game. The full Al Bundy there for Travis Kelce. But I had to give a shout-out to that stat line. It's just beautiful.
I thought that touchdown number 3 was one of the best plays I've ever seen Travis Kelce make. He ran a route from the left side hash across the field, gets tripped up, is on the ground, gets up, and then catches the ball on the other hash, and then stiff arms like 3 guys on the way to the end zone, making his way in there. It was so special. So special. I want to point this out. I saw people suggest that either, I don't know, Eric or Andy, somebody basically said that, like, the game plan that the Raiders defense brought was the Patriots game plan, that they doubled Kelce. And so, like, if you were like, well, why aren't we just throwing the 7-yard pass to Travis Kelce, you know, at the beginning of the game, the way that they're doing against the Bucs, he was literally double covered, is what it seems like there is being suggested. I haven't listened to the press conferences yet, but
except inside the 5-yard line. Everybody thinks Kelce's like this touchdown machine now, because he scores 4 in this game, and it's just like, that's what he does. Looking back, we used to wonder why he wouldn't get targets in the end zone. Like, that was a stat, like 10 games through one of these seasons, and he hadn't had a target in the end zone the entire season. So going backwards, he's got 7 already this year, 9 last year, 11 the year before that, then only 5, and then 10, and then 8, and then 4 is basically the prime of his career. So some of those seasons, I mean, a season with 5 touchdowns, he had 4 in this game.
You want to see the big difference and like why people argue for someone like Gronk? Look at the touchdowns.
Oh yeah.
I think Gronk has like twice as many touchdowns as Kelce, and Kelce, you know, just passed him in yards. And you know, he's going to have more catches, more yards, all these different things, and be a more seemingly dynamic guy. But Gronk has so many touchdowns compared to Kelce. Now, we'll see how many years he plays. And if he continues to be a red zone guy like this now, I mean, beautiful. But you think about since he's got Mahomes, I mean, he has a 4-touchdown game and a 3-touchdown game. Didn't he have 3 in the game against the, was it the Texans? The Texans game that we were at.
Not sure.
He had, I believe, 3 touchdowns in that game.
Against the playoff game?
The when they came back. It was like he and Pat just locked in, and Pat doing some crazy things that only he would be throwing to Travis Kelce. They just have that connection, man. So much so that I believe Brittany said she's starting to get jealous of their relationship. which I'm sure, even though she was clearly joking, will fuel many restaurant dinner table conversations among, you know, jealous Johnson County women.
I like how it was like, people are like, this is Travis Kelce's like greatest game. Like he went out there and then he's like, I mean, he had 25 yards. I mean, Justin Watson had 10 yards. He barely outgamed him. I mean, Hardman had 73. Hardman actually had 3 times the yardage of Travis Kelce in this game. So I don't know.
It was really, really interesting, I think, seeing that they continue to have a lot of different guys contributing. Some of them I don't know if I necessarily want to be involved as much as they are per se, but like McColl went out and made some plays. I really didn't like the throw to him on that third and three. I don't know.
Third and three. Yes. Third and three. And,
yeah. I think it was the play before they chose to punt, you know, inside of the 4-minute drill.
Basically Mahomes was playing perfect, like for a 35-minute stretch there until that play. And it was just like, oh man, where did that come from?
Yeah. I didn't really like the play call personally. But I mean, really the guy to me that was like kind of the steady force that was keeping the offense ticking is MVS. Easily his best game in a Chiefs uniform. Even with the drop, like it sucks, but I would handle a drop a game. That probably seems like too many. But you know what I mean? Like on a night like that, where it seemed like every time that Pat completed a pass to move the sticks, I see him, you know, throwing a pass 10, 15 yards downfield. It was number 11 that was catching it every time. At least that's what it felt like to me. But McColl, you know, he made some plays, and Juju had a couple weird catches. And obviously, you know, Travis catches the ball 7 times. Noah Gray had one out there, got some running backs doing some things. I mean, Pat's really spreading the ball around, but I thought, is MVS currently like the only receiver on the team that I think is getting better? I mean, maybe McColl, the heel thing, I'm not sure, but like, I think Juju is growing in the offense. And maybe Sky a little bit. I guess he's playing, so that's growth, right?
I would say I could see MVS almost kind of becoming like the number one receiver on this team, because maybe Juju's just not getting open at the rate that they would prefer. Like, he's just not getting the kind of separation, and they're like, maybe we start, you know, giving MVS like some of these opportunities and make working him in the intermediate routes.
Well, didn't they say that they thought they could pull more out of him than he was given in Green Bay? And that's like what people have kind of been complaining about, is like, Green Bay had him for 4 years and they used him a specific way, and now you're using him differently and he doesn't really look great. But I think he's gotten better each game, and you know, he's starting to get a little more targets, and I really thought he stepped up in the Raiders game personally.
Yeah, no, he looked great. I also want to say I liked getting Sky more involved there, especially at the end, showed a lot of trust. I almost want to say they're hiding Sky more a little bit. And I think I'm going to go on the record here. He has a breakout game against the Bills here, and he goes for 80-plus yards out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's the right time. The Bills defense has allowed 7 points in the second half through 5 weeks. How many second-half points did the Chiefs score on Sunday?
21.
21 in the second half. I mean, do you think they're going to win?
Do I think they're going to win? Shit.
How about this? Are you going to feel bad if they lose?
Well, that's kind of my biggest question, is like, how big of a game is it really? Because I think a lot of people would agree that these are the best two teams. And if they stay healthy and take care of business, there's a very good chance that they're going to meet again. Now, that this might determine home field advantage. So how much do you care about going to Buffalo in January? I personally trust this team a lot on the road. So I would not be afraid of that whatsoever. And also, last year, going into the de facto AFC Championship was actually a divisional round. I took a lot of confidence from having lost in the regular season and be like, oh man, we lost this first one. We're going to fucking get him in this one. And I don't know if that's legit or just like a weird fan thing, but I gained a lot of confidence with knowing that going into that second game, like, man, they got us once. There's no way they're getting us twice. And it kind of played out that way. It could have gone either way, obviously. But so it's almost kind of like an SEC championship game where Alabama and Georgia are playing each other. They're both undefeated. And it's like, you know, the losing team's still going to go to the playoff. So, you know, it's a big game. It'll be fun to watch. We'll see how they stack up. But both teams are going to get another chance at each other. And this is, you know, this is ultimately not that important of a game. But I mean, this is bigger than that. But like, it almost has that feel like it's like a preseason between these two. It's like game one of two.
I feel that for sure. What's the vibe with Billy Pesto?
Oh, I walked out yesterday with double barrels going up.
By double barrels, you mean birds, right?
Double birds. Double barrels works, doesn't it?
Sure. Okay. It just seems weird. They're so separate.
I'm going to light a flaming bag of poo and put it on his doorstep here. That's tomorrow night. I have various activities planned for throughout the week. Okay. But yes, the messages will be sent. And he's a little, I kept being like, man, I'm just pumped that we're underdogs going to this game. Like, cause I'm all in on this motivation thing, like fucking motivate us to the nth degree. Like we need it all. And being home underdogs going into this game
for the first time in Mahomes' career. I mean, like that is the most exciting element, is the fact that unless a whole bunch of late money comes in, it's the first time in Mahomes' career that he's not favored at Arrowhead. And I think that they'll know. So the right person will tell him. I mean, it makes me think of like, I don't know if you're a dedicated Ted Lasso watcher, but they start telling Jamie like, hey, you have to be an asshole, but like only when we tell you, right? You need to be a team player. Right. But then, and the signal is the double barrels, the aforementioned double barrels. But it's literally like you have to have that switch that you can flip.
I will say, Pesto, when I asked him, he said, not that confident right now. So take that for what it's worth. He was sending me a message earlier wondering why, how come it's always in KC? I just responded, you know, better fans, with an easy two-word response to him. But yeah, we'll have more conversations, see where we're at throughout the week. But I think I was feeling more confident than he was at first meeting, I will say.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's just like carrying it on too long. You know, people talking about how petty Pat gets, but I mean, I feel like the motivation thing for athletes at this level, you're really making a great point there, because I'm just like, they're going to always try to find something to stay motivated and to play at the level that they need to. And so, yeah, I do think that potentially someone is always going to be searching. Like, is it Bobby Stroop? Every time that Mahomes comes in to do some training, Bobby's like, hey, so, you know, you're not going to be favored at home for the first time in your career there, Pat. I mean, like, there has to be somebody that's willing to do that, knowing that, like, hey, this is a big game. And we need to find the bulletin board material to piss Pat off. Does he have like a designated social media coordinator or something, that not just the person that tweets for him, but that monitors everything and figures out how can we motivate Pat this week? Is that a job? Can I have that job?
What a job. I mean, I wouldn't surprise me, because he sees everything, it seems like. And he does seem like he's petty, but I mean, this is just something that a ton of great athletes have. I mean, Michael Jordan takes this to the ultimate degree, obviously, just creating slights wherever you can. And it's bizarre. It's unhealthy. But it's a shared characteristic amongst a bunch of greats. And it's almost kind of leads to like maybe a lack of motivation from the rest of the team. Like, man, we got Patrick Mahomes. We're going to be fine. Like going into this game. We got Mahomes. We're going to be fine. We're going to win. He'll find a way. And they're not wrong. I would prefer to see that, not see that attitude from the rest of the team, but it's hard to not think that because fans think it too. You say something, I put out a tweet like, I'm a little worried about this Raiders game. And it's 15 different responses that just say Mahomes, like, just relax. We got Mahomes. And it's like, I mean, you're not wrong.
When I think about this, I mean, look, I'm an English teacher, all right? I'm constantly thinking about and talking about stories. I look at the way that Chiefs Bills has gone, and it seems like they just haven't been able to figure it out yet. You know, the Bills have beaten the Chiefs, but like when it's mattered, nah. They have to feel like the Chiefs are like their biggest nemesis. They're the big bad. And like the stories that we see are like miracle, the time that the underdog beats the big bad team, right? You don't ever really get to see movies about the team that goes 41-5 in their division. You get to see movies about the team that wins one of those five times, right? It's kind of rooting for that underdog team. And so I think that in general, if I'm a Bills fan, hearing that Billy Pesto said, like, hey, I'm not very confident, I don't know if that's necessarily how I would feel, but I think that I would be telling myself, the conversations I would be having with my fellow members of Bills Mafia would be, sooner or later, we're going to get these guys.
And, well, they kind of did.
I mean, did they?
Well, like, well,
they feel like they should have won the Super Bowl last year. I know that they're probably pissed off about it. I mean, should Bills fans feel confident as being favored on the road? I think they
beat us up last year in the regular season, but he's a smart fan. He kind of looked at it. He even said something when we were talking, like, man, you guys are super beat up in that first meeting. Mm-hmm. And, it's a game where the Chiefs turn it over four times and the Bills turn it over zero times. So, I mean, that's if two good teams happen and you tell those facts, one team's beat up and they lose the turnover differential by four. Yeah, I mean, it's probably going to be somewhat of a rout. There is a very interesting historical comparison the Chiefs are kind of the incumbent. They have all the winning on their side, but like the media just keeps anointing the other team and they keep being the favored team and they keep thinking they're going to bust over that hump. And like, this is the time they're going to beat them. And it's the Colts and the Patriots from prime Brady and Manning years when the Patriots beat them numerous times in a row. And every single year going into it, well, Colts are preseason favorites going into this one. And then they play in the playoffs. Yeah, nope, this is the time. The Colts are favored. It's going to happen eventually. This is the time. And it's very similar to this because the Bills are just like being anointed. And nobody can really figure out why, at least hardcore Chiefs fans can't figure out why. And it's just like, man, why? We own them. What have they proven? What have they done to earn this respect? And nobody really has an answer other than like, well, they just sometimes they look fantastic. Like, I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's just like cheering for second place, like expecting it, like saying, like picking the Chiefs is boring. I don't know what it is, but we saw this before with Peyton and Brady. And Brady won a numerous times before Peyton did actually finally get over the hump.
I appreciate the like historical comparison, and probably a better one than the one that came into my head. And I think maybe every other Chiefs fan at home, like trying to buzz in. Oh yeah, I know who it is. I know who it is. I know who it is. It's the fucking Chargers. Getting picked to win the division year after year after year. Or, ooh, look at the Chargers. That's the Super Bowl team. They're going to do it. They're going to get through. They're not going to be hurt this year or something's going to go right. You know, being picked to beat the Chiefs when they can't seem to beat the Chiefs, right?
I would say there's one difference, because that's like a media thing, and that's more like I want to make a sexy pick kind of thing. Whereas okay. The Colts and the Bills both shared they were going into these games favored, where it swung so far that even Vegas thought this was the time, and they're the better team, and it's going to happen now. And, you know, we'll see.
What was the spread on Chiefs Chargers this year at Arrowhead? I mean, it's a Thursday night, short week. It was
would have been Chiefs by 3. Favored.
Okay. All right. I believe that's just like the stock, right? You get 3 points for being at home.
Yes. Yes. Okay. So that's basically saying they're the same team and 3 points for being at home, which if you take this the opposite way, and I can't believe that this would be accurate, but this would be saying by traditional terms that the Bills would be favored by 9 in Buffalo, because it would be 6 on a neutral field. And if it was at Buffalo, it would be 9. And that's just ludicrous. There's no way that would be the spread, but that is by traditional senses. That is what this would be saying.
Wow. That's bizarre. Well, look, folks, the Chiefs and Bills is obviously a huge game. They were doing promos for it before the Chiefs had even played the Raiders. I can't even imagine the cheapest ticket getting into Arrowhead on StubHub right now is probably like $200 or something. I bet it's asinine.
It's more than that. I'll tell you that. It's more than that. Last time I looked.
You're going to get the marquee Jim Nance, Tony Romo, 325, the fun. It starts at daytime and then it gets darker and darker and it ends under the lights. It's going to be a really awesome experience, whether you are at Arrowhead or at home.
Do you like it at 3? Do you like this game, this kickoff time?
I love a 3 o'clock game personally, because I can sleep in and also get to bed on time. So it's the best of both worlds for 37-year-old Ryan Scott Hall.
The other 3 o'clock games are Rams, Panthers, and Cardinals, Seahawks, both kicking off at 1:05, the worst kickoff time. So Chiefs, Bills at 1:25 all by themselves, and I think all by themselves on CBS. I think it'll be the entire country is viewing it. So you get the national TV audience still, but just earlier than like a Sunday night kickoff. I mean, I like it. I like it that it's kind of during the day, not at Sunday night. And we also get Eagles, Cowboys. Lots of power rankings. These are the top 4 teams in the league squaring off this weekend. So it's fun. This is fun. It's going to be fun, baby.
Thanks for appealing to our 8 West Coast listeners with your 1:25 kickoff time.
Oh, shit.
Everybody in Kansas City's like, what? 1:25? What is this guy talking about?
I did it. It's official. I'm a West Coaster.
There you are.
Oh, boy.
All right.
I still say noon games, by the way. I still say noon games. That's just, that will always roll off the tongue.
Noon and 1:25.
Yeah.
That'd be an interesting interval there for the NFL.
I mean, honestly, that's how it should be. It should be staggered throughout the day, so you're getting different finishes at times. Although, then I will say, the witching hour of those noon games, the witching hour of the noon games, it's about as good as it gets, especially when you're not playing.
Yeah. Yeah. That's a lot of fun. All right, man. Chiefs, Bills. Both 4-1 entering that Sunday afternoon game. Going to be a big one. I am Ryan Scott Hall. He is His Darkness. Go Chiefs.
Chiefs.
Who's the best?
Go Jordan.